As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, from the Dragao to the Carabao, it's another big week of action. There's Champions League with last 16 first legs. Travelling Arsenal failed to get their shots and don't get past Porto. Napoli debut a big girl's sock and a goal from Arnautovic means Atleti maybe are. Then there's Sunday's Wembley League Cup final, Liverpool-Chelsea, and Premier League news too. We ask, what was all the fuss about Liverpool-Luton and who is Oliver Glasner? All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Well, hello there, listener. Let's see. Thursday, the 22nd of February, and a fat Totally Show ready for you, featuring Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
Hello, Duncan. Charlie Oakleshare.
Hello.
Hello, Charlie. And also Natalie Gedra from Sky Sports.
Hola.
Hola, Natalie. How's everyone? Yeah, how are your miserable lives as journalists?
Well, we're not as good as you know, the tribal winner manager. But, yeah. You know, we're doing okay.
Doing okay. All right. It's been a busy midweek, eh? Loads of midweek action. Duncan Bradford Wickham in the Bristol Street Motors Trophy.
Yeah. Big game. Bad pitch.
Right.
Good outcome.
Wickham went through?
Yeah, they didn't deserve to. They played very poorly in Bradford. I mean, I'm assuming most people didn't watch this game. Bradford's pitch is no longer... Do you remember the game at Chelsea in the early 2000s?
Oh, yeah, well, the sand.
Yeah,
sandy
it was
pitch.
Pretty much like that, but a little bit more muddy. But so it was almost impossible to play football, and then there was more rain.
It rained on their parade.
Yeah, literally,
because
yeah.
It's called Valley Parade. Mm.
And, yeah, Bradford dealt with it better, but Wickham, a team we've let in a lot of late goals this season, scored one of their own, and they're off to Wembley.
So. I wanted a match report. Brilliant. They're going to be at Wembley.
They will be playing at, yes... the Wembley Stadium.
Fantastic. All right. Who are they playing? And is it the final already, or is it?
Playing their grudge match rivals, Peterborough United. Ooh. So that adds a bit of spice. Probably the best bit from the game actually was Wickham's Luke Lee. He was booked for wiping the ball on a steward's jacket, which is one of the lesser spotted.
Ungentlemanly conduct.
Yeah, but he apparently did it on a Bolton flag playing for Shrewsbury last season. So he likes to, you know, dry things.
Will you go to the final?
Yes.
Take the kids?
Yeah, my daughter's become a big Wickham fan this season.
Nice.
So. All right. Bristol Street Motors.
They'll be dancing on the streets of Bristol Street Motors.
Also in action midweek, Manchester City and Liverpool continued their Premier League charge. City beat Brentford 1-0 with a Haaland goal late on. Liverpool did their kind of Barca 2019 cosplay thing against Luton, coming from a goal down to win 4-1. In America, the 2024 MLS season kicked off. Inter Miami against Real Salt Lake, Charlie. 2-0 for Inter Miami. Suarez and Messi turned up for this one. They didn't do the scoring, but anyway, that's nice. And, of course, there was the Champions League. The Champions League, another four last 16 ties, including this.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Porto!
That was Portuguese radio Antena 1's reaction to the 94th minute winner by Galeno against Arsenal. What were they saying there?
I find it interesting that in Brazil we say gol,
yeah,
and they say golo.
Ooh,
yeah, right, it's golo. One of those light differences between Portuguese they speak in Portugal and in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty understandable.
Yeah.
Golo, golo, golo.
Porto, porto, porto.
Porto, porto, porto.
Yeah. Anyway, what a stunner from Galeno, the last kick of the game, effectively. He'd had that amazing chance
at the 21st
minute. Double chance, yeah. But yeah, what a strike.
You know, I went to look him up.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, because there were plenty of Brazilians playing that match between Arsenal and Porto. And it's very common that Brazilians, they go to Portugal for passports. A lot of Brazilians have Portuguese passports because of family. And he's 26 already, and I've never heard of him. Mm. And in Brazil, he's not known at all. Wenderson Galeno. He had a year and a half in Brazil. He played for a small club in Goiás, in the central of the country. He joined Porto in 2016. He was just 19. And then he's one of those careers that were built in Portugal. So he was on loan in other Portuguese clubs. He played for Portimonense, Rio Ave. He played for Braga. He was sold to Braga. That was intriguing. He was sold to Braga, and then he did really well at Braga. And then Porto looked at him and said, I don't know, we want him back. And then they activated a clause in his contract of rebuying him.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Yes.
The old buyback.
Yes. And then now he's scoring goals in the Champions League.
Potentially priceless goal. Although, 1-0. I mean, Arsenal lost 2-1, was it, at Lens? They do this a fair bit, don't they?
Well, their home form in the Champions League, they've won 4-0, 2-0 and 6-0 this season. So I think even with a 1-0 deficit, they would still be the favourites to go through and they would back themselves. But obviously, it does change things, especially as this was a really painful evening for them against the low block. They didn't really create much. And obviously now with a lead, Porto will go and sit just as deep, if not deeper, and try the same tactic, which largely worked really well.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because in the Champions League this season, teams haven't sat off Arsenal. And Arsenal, as you say, have picked them off. And it's almost like Porto have gone, hang on. How
Maybe
Arsenal
let's not do that.
Pegged back in the Premier League. Oh, yeah, let's do that. Yeah. We've got, and obviously they've got some players who are quite adept at doing that. So I think it might be quite hard for Arsenal to break them down in the second leg, but you would still make them favourites.
Right. If they have some shots on target, for example.
That would help, definitely, right.
I think they had Jesus back as well, who, whatever people think about him in the Champions League, he is superb, generally.
What is the prognosis as for his return?
Well, it keeps dragging on. He played against Forest, scored and set up a goal, but played through injury. He's had this knee issue. But that was 3 weeks ago now, and it keeps sort of getting delayed and delayed. And he had the surgery back end of 2022, came back, has had niggles. So it is a bit of a worry.
But honestly, how intriguing is that the same team that scored 21 goals in the past 5 matches didn't have a shot on target? And after the match, they were mentioning the wingers, that they weren't involved enough, especially in the first half, which is something that we heard during this season, that you know, opponents were targeting Martinelli and Saka. But when they did get involved in the second half, they weren't making the right decisions. The final decisions weren't going their way. So
It's Arsenal set-piece game as well, which has been such a factor this year. They weren't able to produce anything from that. But credit goes to Porto, who you imagine did the homework.
They did.
And that's now their sixth straight clean sheet at home. So
in the olden days, losing 1-0 away in this sort of game with the away goals would have been really dangerous for Arsenal. But now it isn't. And this does feel like a sort of game that highlights that kind of missed that bit of jeopardy, really.
Even 0-0, I used to think, was a really good result for the home, always a better result than it seemed for the home team.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then you could go away and you just needed the one, and suddenly there's kind of panic at the home stadium.
This midweek in general in the Champions League felt a little bit flat. And I wonder if the absence of the away goal jeopardy, which, I mean, it is in some ways an artificial.
It was one of the best rules in football.
Wasn't it?
I love it. It makes stuff feel
like European football as well. Like just the Carabao Cup with a bit more glamour.
And one of the best things about the away goals rule was that it meant extra time was so much less likely. And extra time is just generally really bad in football. And just having that kind of, you can go from winning to losing with one goal was an amazing dynamic. I guess this was a bit of a return to those Christmas festive games that Arsenal had, where they struggled, if they, you know, not going ahead early. That said, I think for them, 0-0, which, you know, it was a 0-0 game, really. You know, it was an amazing goal to settle it, kind of came out of nowhere. You know, 0-0 would have been a pretty good result for them. They would have happily taken that.
Except that now Porto can draw. Porto have had 22 competitive matches in European competition in England. They've won none of them. They have drawn three, but lost the other 19. So, you know, those are the numbers.
One was that one, the famous Old Trafford Mourinho.
Of course.
Dancing down the touchline, which was... They'd won the first leg that time in Porto, hadn't they? And then that got them the draw.
There was a Paul Scholes goal called offside, which was.
And how different Mourinho's career might
have
been.
How different his suit would have looked.
Well, yeah.
Fewer grass stains.
Absolutely. But no, Porto did do really well from the set pieces. And Arsenal's big sort of one of their weapons at those is Ben White, who is a real irritant, goes and gets by the goalkeeper. And weirdly, a lot of teams seem to just let him do it. Mm. But obviously, Porto were wise to it. And I mean, every corner there was just grappling and quiet words from the ref. I mean, there was a good stat that went round. The ball was in play for, let me just get the numbers up, but it was nothing. I mean, it was like 45 minutes of the game. The ball was in play for just 51.7% of the game. By some distance, the lowest percentage of any of the round of 16 ties so far this season. Lazio Bayern, by way of comparison, was 66.9. Sam Dean tweeted that. And that does tell the story. I mean, it was so stop-start. It was a really boring, bitty game, I thought.
Yeah, and in Premier League terms, Arsenal are pretty high normally in terms of ball in play. So, you could say it was a job well done.
Yeah, they played on their terms, didn't they, Porto?
There you go. 3 weeks' time, they'll be at the Emirates. We'll see how that works out. Saturday, meantime, Arsenal will be facing Newcastle, looking to bounce back and avenge their 1-0 defeat at St James's Park back in November, which was the subject of some controversy. Do you recall this, Natalie? An Anthony Gordon goal that it had a long...
Yeah,
they're still checking that. Yeah, 5 minutes ago.
They're still checking that goal. No, but seems like... it seems like it was a lifetime ago, honestly. Yeah. For both teams, I think, and especially for Newcastle, because they've been leaking so many goals. And if I were a Newcastle fan, I'd be so worried about the duel between Dan Burn and Saka.
Mm.
As much as he didn't have a good midweek, he's so in form. And Dan Burn, he's been struggling. It's been a theme for Newcastle that he's struggled a few times against very quick opponents. It was very clear against Ogbene in that 4-4 with Luton. So that was a big talking point. And Newcastle, in the Premier League, Arsenal, they're in a real scoring form and they've been leaking a lot of goals. And it's down to many things, not only the goalkeeper. And, you know, you have Dubravka, who's an excellent goalkeeper, but he's different from Nick Pope. But you have changes in the midfield and you have the speed that is not happening. So... I'd be worried if I was a Newcastle fan, especially with Arsenal's speed.
He did well in this. I know it's things have changed for him, but Dan Burn did well in this fixture last year against Saka, which finished 0-0. In fact, that was the last 0-0 Arsenal had had until... Oh, no, it didn't end. It was said yesterday during the game, this will be the first 0-0. So that was the last 0-0 Arsenal had.
Really?
Was against Newcastle 13 months ago.
Do you know, Newcastle have only ever won once at the Emirates. That was in 2010. And they haven't scored a goal there for 9 years.
Yeah, Ayoze Perez.
There you go.
And it was Andy Carroll who scored that winner in 2010, just
before he left.
I cannot
see another 0-0 for this match.
No.
Although I think the fact that Arsenal played, you know, quite a tight turnaround and also made basically no subs. Jorginho was the only player who came on, so all their attacking players pretty much did the full 90. If Jesus isn't back then, which you assume he won't be, then there's no one else that Arteta seems to really trust, unless he started Jorginho and moved things around, so meant he had a Trossard maybe or someone to come on. But he's kind of relying on the same group of players. And I did think that was telling yesterday. He made one sub, and which kind of tells you how he views the rest of those subs. If you're not bringing them on in a 0-0 last 16 Champions League tie, he probably doesn't think there's a huge amount of use for them.
Which is concerning, because obviously we're getting to the point where last season Arsenal kind of ran out of steam a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is when those players like Zinchenko, Tomiyasu, Jesus, Partey all being out, when they come back and then Arsenal have a squad again. Because at the moment, they've played the same 11 three games running. And the gap then from those starters to the guys on the bench seems to be huge, certainly in Arteta's eyes. So I do think that that will be really important as to whether they can sustain a title challenge and Champions League run.
Okay, that game coming up anyway against Newcastle at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Natalie mentioning Dan Burn reminded me that we've sadly just passed the 10-year point since his famous game for Fulham. Remember where David Moyes, Manchester United, when they United made 81 crosses.
Yeah.
Right. Dan Burn headed away most of them. So, you know, it's good that he's still operating in a different position 10 years later. What a man. Wow.
Magnificent. Nice. There you go. Anyway, more Champions League up next as we get on to the other game Wednesday and the Tuesday matches.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Poi attenzione, che sbaglia, l'Atletico, Lautaro, in area, Lautaro, Oblak, la porta vuota, Arnautovic, ha segnato l'Inter! Ha segnato Marco Arnautovic!
Tuesday, Inter beat Atletico Madrid 1-0. Goal by Arnautovic. Oof, he needed that as well.
Mm.
That same evening, PSV Eindhoven were 1-1 with Borussia Dortmund. And the other game on Wednesday
that wasn't a penalty.
I mean, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
It was Mats Hummels who brought down Malik Tillman.
But he gets plenty
of the
ball. He gets the
ball, but then he goes in with his studs up, gets the ball, but then is basically lying as a kind of human barrier to the player, and his forward momentum takes him over and he trips. So I don't know which part gets the penalty. Yeah.
I have to say, when I heard the outrage of like how's this given as a penalty, then I saw it and I kind of thought, sort of can see why that hasn't been overturned.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if it meets that threshold. Like, I didn't think it was as outrageous as most seem to.
People who watched this game attentively felt that it was a fair result anyway, the 1-1. All right, Natalie. Anyway, on Wednesday...
I'm by myself in this.
How did you feel about
the
1-1?
Duncan.
No. 1-1 as well for Napoli and Barcelona on Wednesday. Wasn't a great game.
It wasn't a great game. No. It was a decent performance from Barcelona. They haven't had many of these during the season. So I was looking the Spanish press, which is always interesting, you know, because if it's a so-so, it's kind of a good performance, they either think it's tragic or the best performance ever, but it was like the right tone, so I think that says a lot about how Barcelona played. It was okay, but I think that the big story is at Napoli.
Yeah,
the new manager.
Yeah, Barcelona were very much in control of the first part, in which Napoli looked kind of lost, and it's understandable because their new manager had one training session with them after being brought in on Tuesday. His name, as we were discussing on in Tuesday's Euro show, Francesco Calzona, and this was the first club match he'd ever managed as well. How about that for your first club match? Have a go with Barcelona in the Champions League. Yeah. He was assistant to Maurizio Sarri when he was at Napoli. The pair of them had become friends back when Sarri was... Do you remember when Sarri was a banker who used to dabble in management? And
I love this career path.
Yeah,
that we've seen.
Well, Calzona's a little bit similar. He used to sell coffee or coffee vending machines, which is a bit of a troubling thought in Italy. But anyway, he was involved in the coffee trade, in big coffee. and he was also, you know, doing a bit of the... He used to be a bit of a player and he was doing some kind of amateur-level coaching. And they kind of became friends. And when Sarri started to move up through the ranks, he called Calzona in as his assistant. And he was still there when Spalletti joined. So he had a year with Spalletti. So the feeling was... You know, he knows the club and that.
Spalletti and Calzone sounds like a really nice meal, but not quite.
Doesn't it?
I was going to say, what does Calzone... Obviously, Calzone has that meaning. What does the word actually mean?
Well, calze, your socks, no? So a calzone, something oni, is a big something. So calzone is like a big sock, which is obviously exactly what a calzone looks like.
Yeah.
But a calzona is a feminine one. But anyway, yeah, what it meant was that they had a man in charge who actually made some good substitutions, the press felt, and rescued Napoli from their befuddlement. And they came into the game after Lewandowski had finally put away one of Barcelona's chances, his fifth goal in his last five matches, a swivel and shoot through two defenders past the outstretched Meret, who'd been pretty much the only good player for Napoli till that point. But then Napoli found some form. They came out in the second half with a lot more confidence and attacking intent. And Victor Osimhen, to no one's great surprise, was who grabbed the equaliser. And they could have had a winner. Well, both sides could have, to be fair. There were chances.
Gundogan nearly won it, didn't he?
Now? Yeah, he could have done.
I mean, Lewandowski's goal was amazing, I thought.
Did you like it?
I just thought, I mean, I love goals that you think so few players could have scored that. Mm. And how few players could score with that little backlift, with that many defenders around. It's just such a proper striker's goal. I really liked it. Mm. I did think as well, this game is kind of symptomatic of this slightly weird last 16, that you've got two clubs like Napoli and Barca who seem kind of crisis clubs. You don't have Liverpool in there. You don't have Bayer Leverkusen in there. Mm. Like, it doesn't feel like the best teams in Europe are necessarily even in it, on top of the fact that some of those who probably are in those best 16 teams aren't doing that well at the moment. Like, it does feel like quite an open last 16, or more so than usual.
Yeah, well, the eight ties that we've had in the last 16, only two teams have got a two-goal lead going into the second leg. That's Man City, who were 3-1 winners a week ago in Copenhagen. And PSG, although is a two-goal lead a two-goal lead when it's PSG? I don't know. Anyway, they will be travelling to the Anoeta to take on Real Sociedad in a fortnight. The other game, as I mentioned, was Inter taking on Atletico, which was a proper Champions League last 16 tie. And I don't think the scoreline reflects the level of Inter dominance. Atletico didn't have a shot on target. Inter had plenty, scuffed and skied all of them, particularly Marko Arnautovic, who came on, who I don't think was a particularly great player for Inter back when he was part of the treble-winning side under Mourinho over a decade ago. Has been off kind of journeymanning his way.
I mean, what a
West
career.
West Ham.
Part of that Stoke team that had five Champions League winners. Which was a great moment.
He comes in now and he came onto the field because Marcus Thuram has been such a great strike partner for Lautaro Martinez, picked up an injury, and then Marko Arnautovic comes on and the fans are really beginning to fear the worst. But eventually, after one particularly egregious miss, Lautaro Martinez chance gets squared to him, and he puts it away.
He does. I thought the defender was going to clear it on the line. I mean, it was
close.
Especially the day he was the night he was having.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Oblak, he played a good match, and he hasn't been playing that well this season, and I don't know what to think of this 1-0 because Atletico, they play so differently at the Wanda. So it's all very open still because they were very conservative in Italy. They properly defended, and now they're going to play their game in Wanda Metropolitano, and they're going to play a crazy second half probably. They're going to hold back in the first half and go for it in the second half. So it's all very open in this fixture.
Yeah. Inter haven't lost a game away from home all season. In fact, they've only had one defeat all season. They've also had, in the Champions League, four clean sheets in their seven matches now. 21 in all competitions this season, which is mad. So, yeah, watching them,
I think, like,
against that Atletico is going to be, I think, the tie of the second leg.
Yeah, I think so. I think Inter, this, I mean, with the proviso Man City are still there, I think this is quite an open Champions League this season. And Inter have got, you know, they were in the final last year. They're a good team. I think they've got a really good chance.
All right. Did you see Kanye West at San Siro? Did you, though?
Well,
did you see a hooded figure wearing a black full face balaclava?
Yeah, it looked like a sock, ironically. It should have been a
Napoli. Big sock. Big old sock. I didn't realise that Arnautovic as well was still at Bologna. I mean, he's on loan from Bologna.
Right, yeah.
High-flying Bologna.
Yeah.
Who I saw when I went to Bologna in October.
Did you?
Yeah. And we were really impressed with it.
I like the way you said when you went to Bologna. I saw Bologna when I went to Bologna.
Yeah. Surprisingly enough, Bologna in Bologna, the way to do it. No, I loved them as a team.
Yeah.
I thought they were really good. And it's been, you know, you then keep your eye on them a little bit.
Yeah.
They're doing great.
Lewis Ferguson?
He scored. Yeah. Lewis Ferguson, which
and
really...
Xerxes,
he was superb. Yeah. And I think he may well be moving to a big club soon.
And as much as Xavi Alonso is very much the hot ticket managerially speaking, I think Thiago Motta is going to be the other
Absolutely.
Name that a lot of clubs are going to be seeking, who was Arnautovic's teammate although Arnautović barely played in that Inter treble winning side under Mourinho. Anyway,
he was the one who got elbowed, wasn't he, by Busquets?
I believe he might have been.
No, other way around. He did the elbow to Busquets, got the sending off early on, which is why Inter were playing with 10 men for most of that Barca.
So much one sided game ever.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, all returning in a fortnight, the Champions League. Liverpool were not involved in the competition, but thanks to a generous quirk of the calendar, they did get to play this week on a Champions League Wednesday. They had that come-from-behind win against Luton, and Jürgen squinted a bit and said it was a bit like that time when they beat Barcelona afterwards. We'll talk about that and Sunday's Carabao Cup final, Chelsea-Liverpool, next.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
They're looking for another goal. Dans would have been in had Robertson been able to thread it through. Here is Jadon Dans. It's a lovely turn. Gakpo for four. It might be one for Elliott! That's sealed in style by Liverpool.
Listener, you've got your freshest bunting out and you've rounded up the neighbours for a street party because it's Carabao Cup Sunday. Chelsea-Liverpool. 3 o'clock, of course. The action begins at Wembley. But for many of us, this encounter's already underway. We're playing it in our minds. Natalie, you're going to be there. You've got the hot ticket.
Yes. Very excited.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, after the Luton game, James,
yeah.
Jurgen Klopp was talking to the press and he said something in the lines of, oh, will we be the big favourites for this final? Definitely not. Hmm. Because of the injury list and because... Basically, the injury list, really. And because Chelsea is, they just come from the back of a good performance against Manchester City.
Is this the same Chelsea who Liverpool beat 4-1 a couple of months ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. But it made me think, who is the favourite, really?
I don't know. Who is the favourite?
Is Liverpool still? I think Liverpool's still the favourite because they've shown good football consistently. More often throughout the season, while Chelsea, they show progress, signs of progress, definitely. Mm. And especially against City, I think they were able to set themselves up in pressure in the right way. They didn't go all in and they didn't have the low block. So they got that really, really well. But with Liverpool, it's a complete different dynamic. But the injury list is quite worrying, so...
So the game on Wednesday night against Luton sounded quite dramatic. I was busy with Champions League. It wasn't on TV, but you were able to see because you work for Sky Sports.
Mm-hmm.
What was all the fuss about?
I think second half, they were very efficient. First half wasn't so good. And merits to Luton as well. Mm. They played a really good first half. But I think the fuss was especially around the injury list and how Liverpool was able to deliver a good performance and deliver an important win with such a young team. Their starting 11 was 25 years and 68 days, the club's youngest since February 2018. And on the bench, they had five players aged 19 or under. with one 16-year-old.
Right.
Yes. So that, I think the first was especially around that, around, because if you look at the starting 11 against Luton, the front three, it's a completely different dynamic when you have Diaz, Gakpo, and Harvey Elliott.
Mm.
So during the first half, they weren't getting things right. And Klopp said it himself that they were rushing things a lot. And on the second half, they got that right. But when you don't have Nunez and you don't have Salah involved, because they weren't even on the bench, and Jota, because he's not going to play for a while. While Nunez and Salah, they still have a chance to play Carabao Cup final. So it was important for them to deliver a performance with a lot of goals and get the win without so many important players.
Okay.
Well, it was a very Carabao Cup team that they put out, and a kind of classy nod to final.
Yeah, that is a good point, actually. Kelleher and goal, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, Benny had put Luton ahead in the first half, and then Liverpool stormed back in the second. 2 goals in 2 minutes from Van Dijk and Cody Gakpo, double Dutch. Luis Diaz, who had squandered, I think that's the term.
Yeah, Liverpool missed 4 big chances in the game.
And then Harvey Elliott made it 4-1 in his 100th appearance for Liverpool. I'm astonished that he's made 100 appearances already.
Still only 20.
Wow.
He's, I mean, it was funny, I think, because obviously it was, you know, Liverpool did wake up in the second half, but Rob Edwards said, oh, we made them angry. And I think there's a few ways that visiting managers can go at Anfield. There's the kind of like grumpy version, which we've seen, or there's the kind of lean into the heritage of Liverpool. And it was, you know, Edwards was even sort of congratulating Jadon Dans at full time,
so
saying,
I played with your dad.
And it's almost like there's a managerial opportunity coming up at Liverpool. And if you, you know, I mean, everyone like loves Rob Edwards, but he was on very conciliatory form, shall we say.
It was a really good and important win for them, because I think, you know, people would have been looking at that team, the starting 11, and thinking maybe it's a chance of some drop points, and, you know, Luton are really tricky opponents, so to come back like they did, and, you know, the goal difference battle, which is ongoing,
really good,
that they keep sort of, you know, this and Brentford, to win both those games 4-1,
right?
That's really,
I mean, it's
that's
very
really
unusual. But City, albeit with a game in hand on Liverpool, but not on Arsenal anymore.
They've got third best, haven't they?
Yeah, which is really unusual for Manchester City. And, you know,
so City now a point behind Liverpool.
No, they're four behind.
With a game in hand.
Oh, I haven't updated my table since yesterday. There you go.
Mm. Unlike the podcast.
Yeah,
but,
nicely done.
Yeah.
right, yeah, YouTube viewers.
Yeah, yeah. Hello. I think we can all hope that it's a proper three-way title race, because you don't get
They're
that
rare.
Many. They are rare. Yeah, 2013, 14, probably the last one.
Which people don't really think of, because Chelsea...
It'd be four-team title race, really.
Yeah, for a while. But, I mean, Chelsea being the third wheel in that a bit, which people... I mean, people don't really think
they
of
that. Got away, they fell off and they got away with that because everyone was focused on...
Was that Istanbul? Was that the Liverpool? Yeah. Okay.
And it was also them, obviously, Chelsea beating Liverpool. That was, you know, that was the Demba Ba, Gerrard slip, but Chelsea were basically out.
Never heard about that. What happened?
All it was...
To Liverpool's injury problems and squad depth, this is the earliest in a top flight season they've ever had 5 players reach double figures for goals. And it's the Fab Five, or whatever you want to call them. But, I mean... I guess, you know, Gakpo's probably been the least celebrated of those this season. And
definitely,
now he's got a really good opportunity.
Yeah, their depth there is amazing. To have those 5 players and be able to rotate them.
And they're just so different from one another, which, you know, you can go both ways because they're very different from one another.
Yeah, and actually, like, I always thought the Mane, Firmino, Salah, like, how Liverpool moved on from that was always going to be really, really hard. And I think we saw that last season. And I still think that was like a generational front three, but they're doing something a bit different with a 5 that they can rotate. And as Natty says, those different options, that they've done that really well.
And underrated player of the year, Endo, obviously back from Asian Cup duty and, you know, a genuinely good player.
So would you make Liverpool favourites? And let's talk a little bit about Chelsea, who weren't in action midweek, will be arriving fresh, have looked a little bit better of late.
Yeah, they have. But I mean, their season has been sort of pockmarked with these periods where you think they're getting better, then they step back and look worse again. I think they'll make this competitive, but I do think Liverpool yeah, I would.
Chelsea remind me of a space program in the fact that there's been a lot of money spent on it, and rockets get launched, and sometimes they don't work and they crash, but then sometimes they do, and it's like, oh, the technology is coming good. So,
mate, will they be over the moon come Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, I wonder.
One wonders, doesn't one? Sorry, Natalie, you go ahead, because I was just going to mention a couple of seasons ago when they met Chelsea and Liverpool in the FA Cup and League Cup final, and both games ended 0-0.
League Cup one was good. FA Cup one less so.
Right. League Cup one was the one that went so deep that the keepers had to take
it. Yeah, and it was a great one. It was 0-0, but there were a lot of chances.
It was like the best 0-0 of the season. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah.
Anyway, that was then, but to your point.
No, I think it's good news for Chelsea that Disasi and Colwell did really well against Man City. So when you don't have Thiago Silva, and because obviously he's injured, so it's important for players to step up in this sense. And Malo Gusto looked well as well. So when you have Liverpool's strength up front, you really need your defenders.
A lot of people ask, what does Malo Gusto mean? It doesn't actually quite... It's like calzona, no? It's one vowel away from being bad taste?
Yes, kind of, yeah. Because gusto can mean a few things, but it can mean taste, yes. To taste something.
Does it sound strange to you, malo gusto?
And this podcast makes me think of things that I've never really thought about.
Because I think of that.
Of course you do. Yeah.
Tell you what leaves a bad taste. Your keeper refusing to come off when you want to sell it in a League Cup final.
Chelsea City game. But with Thiago Silva as well, I get the sense that for all he is still really important to them, there is this feeling that actually they can play in a very different way without him, and that's the way forward for them probably from next season. So it's interesting. Like, but I wonder if and when he is fit, does Pochettino stop playing him, or is that too bold a move?
Yeah. Well. You're asking a Thiago Silva.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
So I wouldn't stop playing, because I think his power of anticipation and reading the plays it's like no one else. But you do get more mobility and you have more speed, of course, when you have different players as Disasi and Colwell playing the back.
I mean, we saw yesterday Pepe, who's 40.
Yeah.
Still,
and counting.
Still got next it. Week. Is it 41 next week? Yeah, there you go. I did think that, actually. Yeah, when I heard he was only 40, I thought he'd be older than that. So
and he will
that
be.
That makes sense. He soon will be. But yeah, with Thiago Silva and Hit, you know, there's still a place for the veterans. Yeah.
Yes, no, definitely. But and Chelsea, they have such a talented midfield. They just need to find their right pace there. I think pace is going to be important in this fixture.
Okay.
I mean, Pochettino lost the 2015.
Yeah, his first season at Spurs.
Mm-hmm. Also lost to Klopp in a pretty big final a few years later.
Oh, let's hope Sunday is going to be better than that. Because that match was terrible. That was not exciting.
Hot. That was what people always say about that game. It was really hot.
Yeah, and 3 weeks after the Premier League season finished, wasn't it? So it did have like a sort of post-season friendly.
Also, that game didn't have a place in the Europa Conference League riding on it for the winners, so...
That's true.
Yeah, which whoever emerges victorious from the from the game Sunday will be making their plans for far-flung European stadia.
I mean, that is where Chelsea are in the position where they could do Conference League, get that. Then they could win the FA Cup. That gets Europa League, doesn't it? So they could sort of be trumping themselves. And obviously they could still do it through the league, but this does feel like their best route.
All right, well, enjoy the game, Natalie, on Sunday. And let's next up move on to the Premier League action that's taking place this weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Premier League this weekend, no lunchtime game on Saturday. There's four games that you can't watch at 3 o'clock. That's Palace-Burnley with Palace's new manager, Oliver Glasner. Villa Forest, the Centre Parks Classico, as I like to call it. Man United, Fulham and Brighton, Everton. That was 5-1 for Everton last season. Mm. Still reeling at that. At 5:30, there's the latest chapter in what is, I think I'm right in saying, Duncan, the most one-sided series in English top flight
English
football.
League history, yeah. 19 games Bournemouth have played against City and have never won.
Right. And 13 games so far in the Premier League, and it's 13 wins for City. So they go again at the Vitality Stadium, Saturday tea time, and then at 8 o'clock, Newcastle will be visiting Arsenal. 8 o'clock, that's brutal, isn't it? It'll be as tough getting home from there as Royston Vasey.
Very much so. Roy Chubby Brown's real name, of course. Hmm? Roy Chubby Brown's real name.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, but that would have been 12:30, but it got moved because of the rule that if you've played away, certainly in Europe, and it might be away generally, but definitely away in Europe, you can't go Wednesday night away in Europe and then 12:30.
Even if you're Liverpool. Saturday.
Even if you're Liverpool. And Liverpool, I think, are the last team to do it. Away at Newcastle in what would have been April 2022?
That's
amazing. Or May 2022.
Amazing. Kind of space, okay. Yeah. So it's, all right, so it's not the TV bigwigs' fault, it's the rules.
Them's the rules.
Okay. There's a game on Sunday. It's Wolves-Sheffield United. That's at 1:30. Don't know how that happened. And then on Monday night, you've got West Ham-Brentford. Quick mention for Man City and their 1-0 win against Brentford. Anybody want to express any?
Yeah, I mean, Brentford did pretty well in this game, actually. And it was quite weird because they just got a little bit carried away and sort of sent a few players forward. And then City countered and there's a slip in there. I mean, it's a slip that I don't think would happen almost against any other player but Haaland. I think the defender's so fearful that he's about to get in a one-on-one with Haaland, and it was quite a similar situation to Haaland against Branthwaite a couple of weeks ago, and Haaland just absolutely charged past him. I think it's Ayer just fell over, so he didn't have to get involved in that duel, and Haaland went through. But yeah, a big win for them. It looked like it might be a frustrating one.
Yeah, lovely Ederson save in there as well. Lovely. He went flying across, but instead of palming the ball away, he caught it and landed with it, like it was the 1970s.
Yeah,
that is quite
Very retro.
Very. Anyway, Bournemouth hosting City this weekend.
Yeah, the first fixture at the Etihad is not a good memory for them as well.
6-1.
I was the...
Were you
the,
there?
The, yes, I was. It was the Doku parade.
Yeah.
Yeah. God.
Scored a goal.
Four assists,
yeah. Yeah, well...
Has anyone ever got 5 in a Premier League game? No.
Never happened. Not yet. Anyway, down the bottom... Pending points deductions and appeals and that kind of thing. Situation is currently Burnley and Sheffield United, joint bottom, 7 from safety, looking a little bit done for. 5 teams then within 5 points of each other, battling not to be team 3. That's Brentford, Palace, Forest, Everton and Luton, who still have a game in hand on the others. Saturday at 3, 2 of those of that quintet face off at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace taking on Burnley. It's going to be a debut match for Palace's new manager, Oliver Glasner. To fill us in a little bit on what to expect from Oliver, let's hear now from Raphael Honigstein. Rafa, wiki me this. Who is Oliver Glasner?
He is a former Austrian player. Second division, who had a long career that came to a halt when he had a bit of a head injury and was advised not to continue playing. Then became a coach at SV Ried, the club that he played for. Then went to Linzer ASK, LASK, really successful there. And then he made the step up to the German Bundesliga and had really real big success at Wolfsburg, taking them to the Champions League. And of course, Frankfurt then followed with the famous Europa League win and surviving the group stage in the Champions League in the second season. but he does have a habit of falling out with sporting directors a little bit. That happened at Wolfsburg, happened at Frankfurt, which is why after 2 years each at both of those clubs, he moved on again.
Okay. What kind of football do you think the Palace fans can expect from him?
I think slightly more expensive football than under Roy Hodgson. Maybe that's not too difficult, but he does like to be quite direct. He does like to press. He does like to commit men forward. He doesn't have a fixed formation. Played mostly with three at the back at Frankfurt, mostly with four at the back at Wolfsburg. But the principles are quite similar. There's always a big emphasis on pressing a lot, running a lot, and trying to be, quite fast and direct going forward. So I think pretty exciting for Crystal Palace. I think ultimately there's a ceiling to what he can do there in relation to the strength of the other clubs in, let's say, the top third of the table. But I think he's going to give it a go, and that should make for some interesting times, I think.
He's only the second Austrian ever to manage in the Premier League after Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton. Where would you put him on the scale of Bundesliga managers in the Premier League with, say, Klopp at one end and Felix Magath and Sanchez at the other? Where would you put Glasner?
He's much closer to Klopp than to Magath. A lot of people think he's underrated because he's a little bit quiet. I mean, he can be quite outspoken, but he is not a big character, and I think people tend to dismiss him a little bit because of that, and perhaps don't look at the coaching qualities as much. But a lot of people are convinced that he is really cut out for very big things. I think in Germany he would have only taken a really big job after Frankfurt and Wolfsburg, but he was very, very excited and determined really to go to the Premier League, even if perhaps Crystal Palace aren't the most sort of immediately promising engagement in terms of fighting against relegation and so on. He thinks that he can do enough there to either take Palace up the table or show that he is ready to do it at a bigger club.
Raphael Honigstein. Yeah, interesting. So Europa League winning manager, Rocky up at Selhurst Park.
Palace obviously used to be nicknamed the Glaziers. It's quite similar, isn't it?
It's quite similar, isn't it?
Glazniers. No.
So they're taking on Burnley, as I say, which is not a bad opening fixture, is it?
Probably the best one you could ask for, yeah.
Right. Okay. Palace on the longest run without a clean sheet of any team in the Premier League. 14 matches now. Anyway, there you go. They had that 1-1 draw. That's another game that happened since our last show. A 1-1 draw away at Goodison on Monday night. Duncan, give us a one-line match.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a big game in the relegation battle. I mean, I think Everton would have come out that disappointed. They didn't win. They didn't really get going. Palace.
They haven't won for a while.
No. Since
8 Premier League games.
Yeah, since early December. And it's kind of, those sort of runs sneak up on you and, you know.
They sleepwalk towards relegation.
Yeah. Obviously, Everton are in a very odd situation where they've had a points deduction, there's another one pending, but then the original one might get reduced. So we literally don't know what their correct position is. But
for now, they've moved out of the bottom three on goal difference above Luton with that draw on Monday. Everton have what looks like a difficult fixture this weekend, Saturday, 3 o'clock away at Brighton. But then, as I mentioned, extraordinarily, last season they went down to the Amex and they beat them 5-1.
That was crazy. It was a real Brighton at their going from the sublime to the ridiculous sort of phase where they have a game like that. I think they then went and beat Arsenal 3-0 at the Emirates 6 days later. So, that was kind of where they were at that point. And then got smashed by Newcastle in the game after that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they don't want right now, because they're really looking for consistency. I was at Sheffield United Brighton and I spoke to De Zerbi after the match. And he was, he's such a fascinating character, honestly. Not in a predictable way, because it's not like, oh, he's, the way he talks, it's it's not like Jurgen Klopp fascinating. It's right. not engaging in this
he's
sense.
He's not a charismatic guy.
Yes, but he says things that are very surprising. He just drops it. Like
we what?
We were talking about the wingers, about the Jingra and Mitoma, and how much freedom they have and how creative they are. And he's like, yeah, no, you can talk about creativity about regarding them, but one of the most creative players I have on the team is Van Hekke. Van Hekke is a defender. So you think of him, you associate him with this branded football of like attacking, and then he just spills out that his defender is like the most creative player in his team. You know, he does these things, and he talks about the consistency of results because he's pleased with the performances. He said, no, we got really good performance. I can't control the results. I love that. I really do. I find Brighton fascinating and him even
more. And Van Hekke, the way he plays is really interesting. I mean, he goes flying out of defense to go and, you know, try and win the ball high up the pitch and things like that. Like, it's very kind of on brand for De Zerbi. I think with Everton, it's interesting because they're one of the biggest XG underperformers. I think the biggest, aren't they? And there must be such a tension for Dyche between wanting, cause, you know, he's not normally shy about kind of defending his record and saying we're actually better than you think, but also he must hate XG. So he doesn't want to invoke that. But that would be quite a good way to sort of make his point that they are playing better than
yeah,
it seems.
Yeah, I think Dyche would, I think he probably accepts it in private.
In private, but he can't say in public.
The brand would not survive him.
No way.
So it's a tricky one, yeah. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's got the biggest underperformance of any player in the Premier League this season in terms of XG. I mean, that's the issue, is that, I mean, Calvert-Lewin was brilliant in the game at Brighton last season, I seem to recall. And
so Everton are the biggest underperformers on XG, and he is the biggest
among them. He's the culprit. And like, we all know that in form, Calvert-Lewin is a top half centre-forward. No one underperforms their XG forever, with, you know, a few exceptions in pub football. So if he can hit form, I think that will be the key. And yeah, maybe Brighton's a good place to do it.
All right. At the same time, Saturday afternoon, Man United are hosting Fulham. Man United have got 5 wins in a row in all competitions.
Mm.
5 wins in a row that have all featured Casemiro, who a lot of people say not playing that well, but when he's playing, they seem to do well. Is that fair, Casemiro?
He did come off at half-time, didn't he, of the Luton game, sort of for his own good, because sent off. But yeah, no, he does make a big difference to them.
Should we talk more about Rasmus Højlund then?
Yeah,
his incredible scoring run.
Yeah, I mean, they are on a great run. I still think their wins haven't always been massively convincing. They tend to win by one goal. I mean, their goal difference is +1. What's amazing, I was looking at this, so over the part, including this season and the previous two, so that's a pretty long stretch, their Premier League goal difference in that whole time is +16.
Mm.
So that's about 100 games plus.
They'd do that in a month back in the heyday.
But like, that's a crazy level of like mediocrity over a sustained
period. You've hit the nail on the head that they win more than they lose, but most of their wins are by one or two goals.
And then
they'll
get
and
smashed.
7-0 at Anfield and stuff.
Yeah.
So
it is weird.
They are an eternal work in progress. I mean, obviously this week has seen, you know, Jim Ratcliffe start talking officially about the club, and it does feel like they are entering a new era. But I mean, on the pitch, it's still a work in progress. But, you know, wins are wins. So
I think what's huge, you mentioned Casemiro, central midfielder there. I think the absence this weekend of João Palhinha. How should I say João, Natalie?
João Palhinha. Yeah, he's suspended.
I'm not sure there's a single player who's as irreplaceable to a Premier League team as Palhinha is to Fulham. Like, he is so good when he plays, and they are so much worse when he doesn't. And that fact alone would make me think United would be big favourites.
He'll
probably win this game. He's suspended,
yeah.
I think he's already got the 10 yellows.
He's made too many tackles.
He's yellow card machine. Like, because he tackles so much.
See, that sounds awful.
But he is. I think he was the first player to 10 yellows last season
No player needs the introduction of blue cards more than
he'd really benefit from that. But he's just so good for them, and they really can't replace him.
Yeah, you talk about Man United not being able to control matches, and a lot of that, you see a player like João Palhinha, and he does the dirty work for them, because he just
too
runs
dirty
the,
at times.
Yeah. Sometimes he misses it a little, but yeah, he completely dominates midfield, and the way he plays everywhere just so comfortably, you know. And Fulham, they have a very poor away form. I think they just have one away win.
The opening weekend.
Yeah. Here's another worrying stat for Fulham. They've only won once at Old Trafford in the last 51 years.
But Rodrigo Muniz has been scoring
goals. He's on fire, isn't he?
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, he really struggled with that because he got to Fulham and then when they were in the Championship and then he went on loan for Middlesbrough, he came back. He was very unlucky with injuries. Then Fulham signed Broha and so we thought, okay, he's not going to get many chances, but now he's scoring, enjoying it, and it's good news definitely for Fulham fans. And it's a nice story as well.
Excellent. Other games this weekend, Sunday 1:30, you've got Wolves, sexy Wolves against Sheffield United. Wolves have won 5 of their last 8 games.
Interesting. Saw them last week at Spurs Stadium, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and they were really good. Yeah. I mean, really impressive. Like, they just have such a threat on the counter. Pedro Neto is just so good. And he was playing mainly on the left, which is very rare to get like a left-footed quick winger. It felt like a bit of a throwback, but he was deadly. And obviously then his assist for the winner, he's charging down the right-hand side. But yeah, he classic one of those players. If he could stay fit, he really could be. I think everyone would be after him in the summer. Maybe they still will be.
I mean, he's got 9 assists and he's been injured a lot. That's decent.
Also this weekend, Villa taking on Forest. That's Saturday at 3:00. And West Ham up against Brentford, who are something of a bogey team for them, on Monday. Hammers have in fact lost 3 in a row in the Premier League and have been beaten in all 5 of their Premier League meetings with the Bees. Is Lucas Paquetar back?
Not sure, but actually he would rival Palinha for how much reliant one team is on one player. I mean, their form has fallen off a cliff since he...
Because the main complaint from West Ham fans is that they're not enjoyable to watch. And Lucas Paquetá, he completely changes them. Yeah.
I mean, using Charlie's cutting-edge goal difference analysis, West Ham, the only team in the top half with a negative goal difference as it stands.
A negative goal difference.
They've been... It kind of sort of mirrors last season in the sense that the fans were very unhappy at this point in the season, and then European football came back and obviously they inched their way to glory. But it does feel like, Groundhog Day a little bit.
Okay. Well, they're in the last 16 of the Europa League. They don't know yet who their opponent is because that's going to be decided by Thursday night's Europa League playoff second legs. There's a Conference League playoff second legs as well. And it's all happening. I'm going to be across it with a very special goal show. If you hear this, before we're going from 5:30 on TNT nice. Discovery Plus, guaranteed 4.5 hours of it. And if it goes to extra time, it could go longer.
How many times will you say the word aggregate, do you reckon?
I think a lot. Remember, we've got different languages. There'll be Jules, there'll be Rafa throwing in some,
Austrian
variations, yeah. So yeah, that's exciting.
And I mean, we did mention actually. Obviously, Arsenal losing Porto does not help Premier League's case for getting a fifth spot in the Champions League.
Wait, have you got the table there?
England were third going into.
Yeah.
So it was Italy who've been doing really well.
Yeah.
Another set of good results. Then Germany, and the top two teams get a fifth side.
Yeah.
There are other nations who are looking to improve. For example, France, who are battling to broaden their presence at the top table.
So as it stands, obviously this is ahead of all the games on Thursday.
Right.
Although it doesn't involve any Premier League teams. So as it stands, Italy are on an average of... So it's basically worked on an average of your teams and et cetera, et cetera. Italy's on 15.1, so they're top. Bundesliga second on 14.1. And the Premier League's on 13.9. So it's pretty tight.
Is there anyone like the Greek Super League sneaking up behind the Premier League there?
Our old friends, the Spanish, on 13, but I think Opta have got a predicted model for it, and it still has the Premier League as the most likely to.
Because they'll all come back on the Thursday night as well. I mean, like, there hasn't been any Thursday night involvement.
Yeah, right. And you'd expect Liverpool, Brighton,
so
City,
Premier
Arsenal
League
to get.
Yeah, I mean, presumably, even like Liverpool, if Liverpool win the Europa League or if City win the Champions League, both of those feel fairly likely.
Yeah, that would basically do it.
Yeah.
That's why the Premier League still is the favourite.
And who's Opta? Who do Opta have as the second team going? Getting there? Fingers crossed.
I think it was Italy. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, obviously Inter again could do the business.
We'll see. That's going to be such a big game at the Wanderer the Civitas Metropolitano.
It feeds into our chat a minute ago about Manchester United, because they're only now 3 points off fifth place. So.
Yeah. They have kind of crept up, and because Spurs aren't playing this weekend, United could go level on points with Tottenham. They would, of course, be behind because of said goal difference.
Nah,
but
if they win 13-0. Yeah. So.
The form Hoyland's in.
But it's nice, isn't it? It'll be lovely for football to have Manchester United fans cheering on Liverpool in the Europa League final.
Yeah.
So special memories.
Very nice, Duncan. What a lovely way to finish today's Totally Football show. Thank you for being here today. Natalie, thank you for coming by. Hope you have a great time at Wembley. Charlie, not sure what you're up to this weekend, but...
No Spurs, so weekend off.
Oh, nice. Mm. Well, enjoy. Listener, I know you'll join me in thanking Liam and Charlie in the booth. And then receive my grateful appreciation of your, ears and things. We will be hoping to borrow them again Sunday evening / Monday morning when we look back on the weekend's action. So perhaps you'll join us then. Have a great weekend in the meanwhile. From all of us here, goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.